Grace to you and peace from God who creates and redeems and sustains all things. Amen. As I was preparing for my sermon, I was reading through Luke, and being a theology nerd, I got all excited about all the kind of theological research I would get to do, looking up, refreshing my memory about Levirate marriage and you know, where the Sadducees were and the Pharisees were around resurrection. Got all excited about all of that stuff. And then I remembered a maxim that's sort of rolling around in homiletical preaching circles. And the question is, does the gospel you're reading address a concern that your people actually have? So I thought about that, and I wondered how many of you woke up this morning worried about Levirate marriage. Pastor Angela, I know you did. You woke up thinking, we are going to do Levirate marriage today. Well, it turns out probably nobody. And as a matter of fact, in a recent study through the Pew Research, talking about younger people in society, it turns out that not only do they not care about Levirate marriage or anything related to it, they actually don't think much in their daily life about the resurrection or any of that stuff that good theology-bound Christians should think about. It turns out they actually don't care that much about it. It doesn't enter into their thoughts. So that when they hear a text, when we hear a text like this one where the Sadducees are trying to trap Jesus in a theological argument, well, if you believe in the resurrection, what about this? It reminded me a little bit of, you know, when you were getting confirmed back in the olden days, and they would line all the confirmation students up in front of the altar, and then you all would toss questions at them. What's the third article of the creed? What does it mean? Or even worse, what's the third commandment? Which we had in our Jeopardy game not long ago, to which my answer was, well, it depends on which set of the commandments you go with for the numbering. So then I turned to Job. And I thought, now this is something that actually has something to do with how we live. You all, I hope, have at least heard of Job. Okay. And in case you don't know, that it's Job, not Job. Which is why when my father said, get a job, I said, no, I'm going to get a Job. And became a pastor. Terrible joke. But Job, in case you don't know much about it, Job is a good guy. Job is the guy. He's upright. He's nice. He's wealthy. He has cattle. He has children who love him, who are slightly above average. All of that stuff is going on for Job. And in this allegory, this wonderful story, Satan says, consider your servant Job. I think Job pretty much follows you because Job has had such a good life. He's the original prosperity gospel dude. And then Satan says, dude, God, let's have a bet. I bet if I make Job's life horrible, his faith will go away. So they do. Job gets boils, he loses his cattle. His family turns against him. He is banished from society. It just, the whole book is this horrible sort of parade of terrible things that happened to Job. And Job is like, dude, I've never done anything. Why is this happening to me, O Lord? And then his friends come to help. Right. So our text for today follows after his friend Bildad has had a conversation. And Bildad says to Job, look, terrible things happen to wicked people. That is how the world is made. And in this long diatribe, Bildad says to Job, look, bad things happen to wicked people and bad things are happening to you, then you must have done something to deserve what you're getting. Well, it seems to me in today's society that sort of makes sense, right? Really, in a lot of our theological circles, in our church circles, we sort of operate that way. If everything's going okay, we call it a blessing. Now, it's not necessarily what we mean that we've been blessed, but it's found its way into our religious vocabulary. It's a blessing. And, you know, I love it when people will say to me, "You're a blessing." And I'm like, "You have no idea and have not talked to my children." Or if things are going badly, we feel cursed. You know, a Jonah. I actually think it would be better to say you're a Job, but a Jonah. Job responds in such a powerful way. All we get is the last part of the text, which is like one of my favorite funeral texts, which is terrible because this is so much good stuff here. Job says at the beginning of that chapter, "How long will you torment me?" He's talking to Bildad. "How long are you going to give me a hard time? These 10 times you have cast reproach upon me. Are you not ashamed to wrong me?" And he goes on, "Even when I cry out violence, I am not answered. I call aloud, but there is no justice. God has walled up my way so that I cannot pass. And he has set darkness on my paths. He stripped my glory from me." He's not having a good day. "And taken the crown from my head." And then later on, he keeps going on and on and on about all the things he has put my family far away from me, and my acquaintances are wholly estranged from me, my relatives and my close friends have failed me, even the guests in my house have forgotten me. Oh, is this your house? My breath is repulsive to my wife. I am loathsome even to my own family. My bones, I love this line, "My bones cling to my skin and to my flesh, and I have escaped by the skin of my teeth." It's a good Jeopardy clue. Where did the term "I have escaped by the skin of my teeth" come from? You can now instantly say Job, 19th chapter. And then he says something I think is powerful and amazing. Having announced this litany of everything that has happened to him and how unjust it all is, then Job says, "But I know my Redeemer lives. I know that my Redeemer lives. Though my words be written down with a pen on lead and engraved in rock forever, these are those words, for I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last, God will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been thus destroyed, then in my flesh, in my actual being and self, I will see God." It's a powerful word. It's a powerful word in a world that finds itself in such upset and turmoil. If anyone deserves to say that God is cruel, or God is unjust, or God is clearly absent, it would be Job. But in the midst of everything that happens, Job's conclusion is, "I know that my Redeemer lives. That God has not abandoned me or my family or anything else. That in the midst of all of this, God is still my God. Even though my friends have spent 10 conversations telling me I'm full of it, I know my Redeemer lives." It's a powerful witness to hope. It's a powerful witness to the power of God in our lives, this presence, this love, this depth, this care that God continues to have for us, even in the midst of the worst of times. Where it connects with our gospel lesson is that Jesus is in fact saying much the same thing. That God remains with us living or dead. I love that what Jesus does what Jesus always does in that text. They ask him a specific question trying to trap him about resurrection. And he pretty much sidesteps it very deftly. Puts the theology aside and says simply, it doesn't matter. It turns out young people were right. It doesn't really matter. Luther will say, look, don't worry about your resurrection. Don't worry about all of that stuff because you have already been saved. So attend to that which the God of the living attends. Job understands that in the midst of all that is going on, in the absence of the obvious presence of God, God remains anyway. Jesus reminds those who are around him and challenging him that this God that they're so worried about far away in heaven, after you all die, is not your concern. For God is the God of the living. The God of the living. And it doesn't matter whether you are Lutheran or Presbyterian or you're not sure that you believe in anything at all, it doesn't matter that you reject or you feel as if God isn't anywhere near you or that a community is broken, God remains with us and loves and cares for us and gives thanks for us. Because you see, when we get focused on just the two ends of the pole, whether it's being Democratic or Republican or liberal or conservative or, you know, short or whatever it is that you put yourself on either pole, turns out God is also at the poles with us. When we separate ourselves from God, God keeps pulling us together so that we may be given away as a gift to the world, so that we might live life as the people of the living God and the God of the living. It may be time to let go of a theology and a piety that looks only to the end of our life, that we just muddle through and hope that things work out in the resurrection. It might be time for us to be the gift that is given away by the living God. This God of the living. For the kingdom is already unfolding around, in, and through us. God is already giving you away as a gift to the world, whether you know it or not. For God is the God of the living, and we know that our Redeemer lives.